El siguiente es un programa pagado por el anunciante y 1600 AM ESPN Deportes no se hace responsable por las opiniones reflejadas en su contenido.
This is a special program on Multicultural 1600 AM, so please stay tuned.
Listen to the Portuguese American Hour on Multicultural 1600 AM. Hear in-depth conversation about Portuguese culture and learn everything happening in the valley within the Portuguese community. Listen Wednesdays from 4 to 5 p.m. on Multicultural 1600 AM.
And welcome to the Portuguese American Hour. I am Justice Neves, here with me always, as usual, Dennis Borges.
The usual guy here, the two usuals. Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to the Portuguese American Hour, a product of the Portuguese Beyond Borders Institute at the California State University, Fresno, and the Portuguese American Hour, which began just a few weeks ago as a weekly adventure, is now a daily dosage adventure. So we are on every day, Monday through Friday, 4 to 5, so just keep on tuning in every day, Monday through Friday, wherever you are, in your car, using your phone, online, anywhere in the world, 4 to 5 Pacific time, the Portuguese American Hour here on KGST 1600 AM Multicultural Radio. And we're going to go straight to our first guest who is on the line with us and from the city of Los Banos, just west here of Tulare. Of Fresno. I always think of, I'm in hometown of Tulare, but I am in Fresno. So west of Fresno, the city of Los Banos, he is a poet, retired teacher, a poet who has published various works and who will be the guest lecture tomorrow at the Portuguese Beyond Borders Institute, last lecture of this semester. Here at the university, and he will be giving his presentation tomorrow. We are so looking forward to it because I am a true fan of his poetry, and besides that, I think that it is time that Portuguese Americans and others throughout the valley and throughout the state and throughout this country learn about the Portuguese American experience in the arts. So, Sam, welcome.
Thank you, Dennis. Well, I'm glad to be here.
We're happy to have you, and we are looking forward to your presentation tomorrow, this Thursday, that is, and it will be at 6 p.m. For our listening audience to, I know we've been talking about this for the last 2.5 weeks or so, but it is always worth repeating. It's in the Peters Building, PB 191, parking lots 5 or parking lot 6 is the best way to get to PB 191. The lecture will start at 6 o'clock, and Sam will be reading some of his poems, talking a little bit about his work. And let's talk a little bit about that, Sam, in a few minutes that we have. How did how did poetry come to you? How did you begin this journey of writing and some magnificent poems, the ones I've had the opportunity of reading?
Well, actually, from about the age of 17 on, I started taking it seriously. Something kicked in, and I realized that that's what I was going to be doing. I was also practical. I realized I wasn't going to make a living as a poet, and
unfortunately.
Right. So what I did was I enjoyed teaching. I knew I wanted to be a teacher, so I got on at Fresno State. I was like 18 years old, and presumably started as, with the idea of becoming an English teacher. And I still did that. But the longer I was at Fresno State, the more I got into the whole idea of creative writing and in particular poetry. Mm-hmm. And that was an incredibly powerful time. It was the late 60s. Mm-hmm. There was an awful lot of things going on. And if you didn't have something to write about, shame on you. I mean, there was just tons of things bombarding everybody every day.
Correct.
I was lucky enough to have landed there with some amazing teachers, and you know, I'll talk a little bit about them tomorrow night and today too, if you like.
I sure. Mean, one of those was Philip Levine, correct? You had the opportunity.
One of them was Phil, right? Yeah. And also Peter Eberwein, mm-hmm. and my first creative writing teacher, one that had a major influence on me, and I'll mention that too, was a man named Charles Hanslechek. And Chuck was my first creative writing teacher. And actually, one of the poems I'm reading tomorrow night was a product of that time. So it's like a 50-some-year-old poem.
Wow. So actually, at Fresno State, then from there you went into teaching, correct?
Actually, no.
Okay.
I have kind of an odd story. I went to the University of Iowa and was in the Iowa Writers' Workshop.
Mm-hmm.
I got my master's degree there. And I came back, and because I guess I was such a non-motivated sort of person, I didn't really go after teaching. Mm-hmm. I had a job which had nothing to do with academia. I worked in a feed and seed store for 20-some years. And eventually managed the store.
Mm-hmm.
And strangely, a lot of stuff came out of that time. I mean, it wasn't like I wasn't writing.
Right.
I just wasn't teaching.
Right, right.
And when that job went away, I got into teaching and taught for another 21 years at the junior high level. All that time still writing, but, you know, paying the bills too.
Sure. And you're a hero in poetry, and you're also a hero for teaching junior high.
Well, I doubt that, but thank you.
it is a tough assignment. Let's talk a little bit about the interesting thing about, of course, many interesting things about Levine, and one of them is we here at the Fresno State Library, we have, as you know, a room dedicated to him.
Correct.
It's called the Philip Levine Reading Room, and I must tell you that I'm very proud and of this one small fact, that is that the new section for Portuguese books or books about the Portuguese, whether it be Portuguese or English, we started with a collection of 500 given to us by the government of the Azores, but we're hoping to add as we get funds, obviously to purchase books. But the collection will be housed, Sam, in the wall that is the right next to the door into the Philip Levine Reading Room, and I think that's special.
I do too.
Yeah,
I think so. Phil would like that too.
I think so too. So your talk tomorrow. Let's talk a little bit about that. We're very excited. For many reasons, you will be talking a little bit about your journey through poetry, and as you said, and as we have put forth in the leaflets that we've sent out to folks who attend and social media and all over. We will be having, you'll be kind of talking about these poems and also reading the poems themselves. It's kind of a journey throughout these 50 plus years that you've been writing poetry.
Right. And I especially, I mean, to be perfectly honest, it's a poetry reading, but I will be, you know, discussing how the poems came mm-hmm. about. Mm-hmm. And I have selected largely poems that have something to do with the fact that I am Portuguese American, but you know, also a couple of poems that have to do with Fresno itself.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a kind of a hodgepodge of things, all hopefully hinged together in a decent way.
Oh, I'm sure it will be. I'm sure it will be, and we're looking forward to it. The title that you picked for it, Creating a Third Country, is mm-hmm. rather very catchy and also very fitting. How did you come up with that title? What made you choose that?
Okay. First of all, I know we needed a title. I knew we needed a title, rather. And it just seems to me that somebody who is Portuguese American has both cultures sort of instilled, ingrained, whatever. And there's kind of a blending that goes on where you become kind of a hybrid in some ways of the two.
Mm-hmm.
I don't spend a lot of time thinking about it, but I know that when I'm, you know, strictly tuned into the Portuguese mm-hmm. idea of what I am, it takes over.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I'm not, you know, I'll be honest, I've never been to Portugal. You know yourself, I don't speak Portuguese, but I can understand a little bit of it. And all of those things play into the idea of what I think I'm about, which mm-hmm. is a mixture of both.
Correct.
And I think I'm, you know, I think I'm not alone there. I think there's an awful lot of that goes on.
Correct. I mean, of the just recently we're talking about here in the Portuguese American Hour that according to the latest census, which is from 2000, because 2010 the question wasn't on there, but we have about 350,000 folks in California who identified as being of Portuguese background, but
right.
those 350,000 or so, less than 10%, basically only 31,000 say they still use some Portuguese. So we have, you know,
yeah.
Folks of second, third, fourth generation.
Absolutely.
The language, I don't think, is a barrier. And I think actually in the Azores right now, and we'll be discussing that in the future, in the Azores right now, some of the works, and there's a cultural magazine that the government puts out, and it's going to be published now in English, because I believe that it's a way to reach the second and third and fourth generation, such as we're trying to do with this Portuguese American Hour.
Right.
How is... Go ahead, please.
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
No, please do.
No, I was just, you know, I wish if I could do it all again, because I had the opportunity to learn Portuguese when I was a little kid. And, you know, there's too many other things going on, one thing or another, and I see it today. I see it not just in Portuguese. A large percentage of the classes I taught were Hispanic,
mm-hmm.
and a lot of those kids didn't speak Spanish.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, it was just, it's the way it is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and growing up though in the Valley area, did the culture itself? I know you had the opportunity, but you didn't learn the language. But did the culture itself have some influence in you?
Oh, big time! Yeah, I mean, I grew up with the, you know, the festas and all of that.
Mm-hmm.
My family was. Very religious.
Mm-hmm.
I can't say I am, to be
sure.
Totally honest, but my family was.
Right.
And, you know, all of that had some kind of effect on me. And most of it, if not all of it, was exceptionally wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, obviously, I still remember a lot of it, you know.
Right, and being Portuguese American, I mean, you write about different themes, and that's
sure.
very prolific, and I appreciate all of it. And I have, I think, most of your books. I hope I have all of them.
If you don't, let me know, and I'll be happy to give you. One.
Well, we will be. As that's one thing that I would like to mention to our listeners here in the Portuguese American Hour is that tomorrow, besides the reading, besides the poetry reading, besides the
right.
the talk, we will also have Sam's books there, so if you'd like to purchase some of the books, we will have them there prior to the talk and after the talk, and I'm sure you'd be more than happy to autograph them if people want to.
Absolutely, it'd be my pleasure.
Okay, yeah. So those of you listening, please do join us tomorrow, not just for the talk, but also if you're interested in acquiring one of Sam's books. You're a very prolific writer, and as I said, you touch upon a lot of different themes, and some of the themes are very, very dear to my heart as well. There is an underlying theme in lots of your poetry, which is the Portuguese, even though it may not be directed, but you know, some of the poems that when I read them, I said, well, this is not really Portuguese. But then you know, there's some nuances in there that make it kind of Portuguese. I mean, they could be any other ethnicity, but they make it kind of Portuguese by what I feel are some family influences. Am I totally out of shape there?
No, you're absolutely correct. At least I hope you are. I mean, that was the intent when they were written,
right.
You know.
Talk a little bit about also do you continue to write every day? How does one write poetry?
You know, it's interesting because today I can't seem to stop, and probably I should once in a while just sit back and take a break. There was a time in my life where I didn't write anything for about 2.5 years, and I don't ever want that to happen again. I mean, you mentioned in the introduction, I'm a retired teacher. I don't see myself becoming a retired poet.
You shouldn't.
It's something that, you know, is part of what I am, who I am. And it's usually something that just, you know, happens. I don't really have to sit down and say, okay, now I'm going to write.
Mm-hmm.
There's some need to do that usually, mm-hmm. and I'm grateful for that.
Mm-hmm. So is there some kind of inspirational moment? Is there something that, or just everyday life occurrences that makes you reflect get the pen and pencil, now no longer pen and pencil, but the writing utensils, let's put it that way.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's true. It's a combination of all those things.
Okay.
And, you know.
And when you, I know that you also use social media, and you know, with all the evils that we have in social media.
Yes, sir.
But it also is a very interesting tool. You know, we can use it for whatever we want to. I suppose that there's been these tools in different manners all throughout the history of the world. And I'm always kind of intrigued by when you share a poem. How people actually do comment, and very enlightening comments most of the time.
Yeah, most of the time, and I've been lucky that way. There are people that get a lot of negative stuff from what they share.
Right.
So I can't really say I ever have.
Right. Go ahead.
I'm a poet who started writing, you mentioned earlier, pen and pencil and stuff. That's how I began. And then I went to a typewriter, and finally a friend talked me into a computer about 1986. And if you remember what computers were like then, they're nothing like today. So I tried to move along with the times, and it does get more and more pleasant to sit down and try to write than it used to be.
Any plans for a future book? For future publications?
Yes, I have. I have enough for several, but, you know, it's not just, it's a matter of somebody, you know, wanting to do them and sitting down and editing them and putting them together. I do have a manuscript done right now, and I'm kind of, you know, sending it around, hoping that somebody will be interested in it. But it, you know, and trying to put another one together at the same time. So I stay busy.
Good, good. Well, Sam, thank you so much for taking time to chat with us.
My pleasure.
I'm sure this has opened up the appetite of everyone who was on the fence whether they should go or not. They should be there tomorrow or this Thursday.
Oh, come on down.
Yes,
sure,
yes,
absolutely.
Please do come on down. So, again, thank you so much, Sam, and we'll see you tomorrow, this Thursday at 6 o'clock at the Peters Building Auditorium 191. Thank you so much for joining
us. I'm looking forward to it. Thank you, Dennis.
We'll see you. So this Thursday, everyone, please do join us at the Peters Building, the Business Center of the California State University Fresno, Auditorium 191 on the ground floor. The parking lots, the best parking lot is parking lot 5 or parking lot 6. Both of them are right adjacent to in the Peters Building. It will start promptly at 6 o'clock. We are always, there's a joke in the Portuguese American community about Portuguese time, but we will do this on American time, so we will be starting at 6 o'clock promptly. If you're there and we start at 6:01, please don't hit me. But it'll be as close to 6 as possible, and Sam will take about 45 minutes or so. He will read from his work. He will talk about how the work came about. I think it's really important for us to cherish these Portuguese-American writers, such as Sam Pereira, who, as I mentioned, is now retired and lives in the city of Los Banos. So this Thursday at 6 p.m., PB191, product of the Portuguese Beyond Borders Institute at California State University, Fresno. It is open not just to students and faculty. It is open to the entire community, and we normally have a good crowd of people coming from all over the valley, from Tulare and Tipton in the south, all the way up to folks who come from Madeira and Merced, Los Banos, and also the Turlock and Gastein area. So come on down and join us for the Portuguese Beyond Borders Institute, the Creating a Third Country, the topic for tomorrow here at California State University, Fresno. Thank you again, Sam Pereira, and we will be right back with another guest as we continue this edition of the Portuguese American Hour on Multicultural 1600 AM.
Listen to the Portuguese American Hour on Multicultural 1600 AM. Hear in-depth conversation about Portuguese culture and learn everything happening in the valley within the Portuguese community. Listen Wednesdays from 4 to 5 p.m. on Multicultural 1600 AM.
No princípio era tudo bem distante e o futuro lá longe tão incerto. Só o nosso amor não estava ausente, fazendo da distância um lugar perto. Só o nosso amor não estava ausente, fazendo da distância um lugar perto. Foi bom inventarmos o caminho que nos trouxe até aqui a felicidade. Lugar onde ninguém chega sozinho, onde os sonhos se tornam realidade. Lugar onde ninguém chega sozinho, onde os sonhos se tornam realidade. O amanhã é amanhã um novo dia, onde te vejo sempre do meu lado. Por ti mudava o mundo e repetia a aventura que canto neste fado. Por ti mudava o mundo e repetia a aventura que canto neste fado.
Listen to the Portuguese American Hour on Multicultural 1600 AM. Hear in-depth conversation about Portuguese culture and learn everything happening in the valley within the Portuguese community. Listen Wednesdays from 4 to 5 p.m. on Multicultural 1600 AM.
And here we are back, the Portuguese American Hour, every day 4 to 5 p.m. on Multicultural 1600 AM and online, Multicultural Radio 1600AM.com or any radio app. It is a pleasure to be with all of you. Thank you for joining us. Portuguese American Hour is a product of the Portuguese Beyond Borders Institute at California State University, Fresno. And we talk about all that is Portuguese in the Valley here every day 4 to 5. Monday through Friday. On the line is another guest of ours, and that is Mrs. Dulce Nunes. Dulce is with the Tulare County Cabrillo Club, and she's here to talk to us about scholarships. That's also very important, especially for the students who are listening to us, as the Portuguese American Hour is a product of the university and the Portuguese Beyond Borders Institute. So it is always important to have support from community members when students are going to college. Dulce, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. good afternoon, Mr. Borges.
Thank you so much for joining us. Can you tell us a little bit about the excellent work that the Tulare County Cabrillo Club is doing with scholarships and some of the requirements that students need in order to qualify for these upcoming scholarships?
Yes, I have the qualifications for the Cabrillo Civic Clubs of California Scholarship. Students must be of Portuguese descent, a USA citizen, or a permanent resident. Students must have maintained a 3.50 total grade point average for grades 9 through 12 and be a graduating senior of a California high school. An official high school transcript must accompany the scholarship application. And students must have participated in at least 3 extra activities while in high school. Students must meet all entrance requirements of the college, community college, trade school, or university that they plan to attend. Scholarships in the amount of $500 will be awarded to the students upon verification of enrollment to the college, community college, trade school, or university. Students, your scholarship application is due to the state scholarship chairman by March 15, 2020. So please, students, contact your scholarship counselor at your high school about the Cabrillo Scholarship. Thank you.
Thank you, Dulce Nunes. Thank you so much. And if they have any information, they can always get a hold of me. I'll be more than happy to get their contact as well. Thank you so much for taking the time to be with us this afternoon, and thank you for all you do for the Tulare County Cabrillo Club and all the other organizations that you are part of. Thank you so much for your time.
And thank you for having me.
Thank you, and we will be talking about the Cabrillo Club scholarships every single program from here on out until the end of the year and obviously until March, okay? Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. Okay.
And that was Dulce Nunes from the Tulare County Cabrillo Club talking about scholarships. Scholarships are given statewide in each Cabrillo Club. There's different councils throughout the state of California. And talking about our organizations, we're going to go now live to our next guest. He is here in studio and will be with us until the end of the program. So we have a little over 32 minutes to talk to him. It's going to be a long conversation. We're going to mix it up. Also, we'll have our daily song here in about 20 minutes or so. But for now, we'll start the first part of our conversation with Jason Denise. Jason, thank you so much for joining us, for driving down.
Thank you for having me, Mr. Borges.
Appreciate it. Appreciate your presence here today. Jason is here for many reasons. He's been involved in the Portuguese American community probably all of his life. But one of the things that we had asked him to come as to the Portuguese American Hour at his earliest convenience was because he was just elected the president, or the 2030s president, for the Portuguese Fraternal Society of America, popularly known in the Portuguese American community as PFSA. So, Jason, let's talk a little bit about the society and a little bit about your involvement. How did you, as a young person, societies and Portuguese American organizations deal with this constant problem of not having enough young people involved? How did you become involved in the PFSA, in the fraternal movement?
Well, it all started when I was young. So my parents, they involved me in the PFSA because they got a insurance policy through the PFSA, so I was involved as a child. As I grew up, the PFSA came to be, and they created a council in Madeira about 11 years ago. And so my family was one of the first families to be involved in the PFSA council in Madeira. And then about 7 years later, I, since being one of the only younger members of that council, was selected as the president for my local council. And I've been president ever since for my local council, helping with different fundraisers. We do a Portuguese donut or Filhos fundraiser every year. This last year, we've made about over 120, close to 150 dozen Filhos, which is a lot. And we all do it all by hand, so it takes a lot of work.
Where do you sell about these at local events? Or
so we do a fundraiser once a year.
Once a year.
Yeah, so we do it in Madeira. Mm-hmm. We do it usually, this year's going to be on the 22nd of February, actually. Okay. And all the money that we use there, we donate it to a lot of different charities, a lot of different local causes like the Rescue Mission, Valley Children's Hospital, a lot of different organizations that to help out the community.
And where is it located at, the fundraiser? Where do people want to, if people on the 22nd of February want to buy some for girls, where do they have to go?
So we actually have it at one of our members' houses. Okay. It's 121 South Granada Drive, South mm-hmm. Granada Avenue, I'm sorry, in Madera. Mm-hmm. If you guys want to find out more information about the cost and stuff like that, we do have a Facebook page, which is PFSA Council number 108 of Madera, and you can see all the information and should be coming out shortly.
Yeah, and you'll provide that with us so we can share it with our folks here.
Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah.
So you got involved, you became president of your local council, your local chapter. Mm-hmm. But there's a fine step or long step, let's put it that way, between being a president or a vice president or an officer at a local chapter mm-hmm. and being statewide president of the 2030s. So how did that come about?
So ever since I was before I was elected president, when I was younger and I was very involved in our local chapter, and they've always wanted me to become a supreme officer. They wanted me to become a youth officer, but I didn't feel like I was ready yet. And then our current supreme officer, which her name is Miss Monique Valance, mm-hmm. she knew she was going to be the next president coming up for this term. So she visited our local chapter and helps to recruit me to become the youth, the 2030s Supreme President. So I thought about it and I felt like this was the right time for me to get involved because I have more time to actually try to make a difference mm-hmm. and bring more youth, because that's very lacking in our Portuguese fraternal society, is a lot of youth and 2030s.
Right. And so you have the... Let's explain that to the people who are listening who aren't familiar with the fraternal societies, in this case the PFSA, Portuguese Fraternal Society of America, which is a junction, let's put it that way, which is of different societies. At one time, there was the UPC mm-hmm. and all of the different organizations that kind of had a fusion together mm-hmm. and became the PFSA. So... there is a president of the society.
Yes, that's correct.
And then there's a 2030s, which is what you are now. And then there's a youth president as well.
Yes, yeah. Okay. His name is Justin Valadon. He was elected as well. So it's Monique Valance, which is our supreme president. Mm-hmm. Then I'm the 2030s president, mm-hmm. and then Justin Valadon is the youth president.
And you probably have the toughest job. And I'm not just saying that because you're here in front of me, but that is part of the issue that we have throughout the Portuguese American community, and that is the part where when you're 20s and 30s, that is kind of the ages that we see less and less involvement. Young men and young lady have, boyfriends, girlfriends, and then they get married, and then they have children, and then it's kind of a tough time. It's easier, I felt, throughout my involvement in the Portuguese American community, to get youth involved, especially if they're in high school, they're involved in different projects, it's just one more. Mm-hmm. In college, that's a little bit tougher because, there's a lot of responsibilities, and most college kids are working as well. And then when you're older, when you're over 40 or 50, you go back to your roots, and your kids are kind of grown up, so you have a little bit more time. But 2030, that's tough, isn't it?
It can be tough. And I just started, so I'm still haven't experienced how tough it's going to be yet, but I'm definitely gonna try my best, because
I don't want to damper it for
no,
you.
No, that's perfectly fine. I mean, I know it's not gonna be easy,
right?
But I will definitely try my best, because like you said, right now in 20s and 30s, there's a lot of things going on in your life, mm-hmm. a lot of important decisions you have to make, a lot of things you're trying to do with so much amount of time.
Right.
So, as part of being the PFSA president, I have to try to find and create events that are, I wouldn't say necessarily like that are worth coming to, but that will get people interested and involved. Like, for example, PFSA is the main sponsor for the Portuguese Festival in mm-hmm. Turlock. Mm-hmm. That's going to be next year on April 18th.
Correct. Yeah, we're going to have the Vieira family here shortly as guests.
Yes. So that's a very, very great experience for those of you who are, even if you're not of Portuguese descent, that are interested or want to get involved in the Portuguese community. It's very great. There's a lot of, they have folklore groups, they have music, they have singers and performers from out of the country that come in. They have a bloodless bullfighting demonstration, bullfight on rope demonstration, just so many things, exhibits, everything packed into one location, and they even have a carnival for the kids, you know, to get the youth involved. And it's just a very great time, and it's a very, you know, fun and family-friendly oriented event.
Right. And so one of your duties, of course, as 2030's president for the PFSA, for the Portuguese Fraternal Society of America, is to go to different councils, correct?
Yeah, so that's correct.
There's councils all throughout, I believe, the entire state and even out of state.
Yes, so there's 67 councils as far as I know.
Really?
Yes. Wow. Not only throughout California, but there's some in Nevada, Massachusetts, and Rhode Island as well.
Okay.
Yeah, so they're spread out. It's mainly California, but they're spread out all over. But there's 67 of them. I don't necessarily know if I'll have the blessing of visiting every single one of them, because it's a lot, you know.
Sure.
Life and everything.
Right.
But I will definitely do my best to try to visit as many as I can to kind of get an idea of what the involvement is and what they are or are not doing to try to bring in more youth, because the youth is, you know, the future of anything.
Right. And most of these visits are tied to the weekend, correct?
Yes. Most of them are on Saturdays or Sundays, you know, because during the week, a lot of people work. So it's, you try to do it on a Saturday or Sunday.
And we're going to have, hopefully, in the near future, John Salvador, my good friend John Salvador, who's the CEO of PFSA, and a couple of the other people involved, Jerry Escobar, I'm thinking about him, and others, as guests, to talk about, you know, actually even talk about the products that PFSA offers. But you become member of these organizations, in this case of the Portuguese Fraternal Society of America, by buying, now it's not just life insurance, but a type of a financial service.
Yeah, they have like annuities and retirements, and they have, you know, the life insurance is one of the main products that they offer. But anybody can necessarily, you don't necessarily have to be a Portuguese descent, but this is, you know, a Portuguese organization, and that's what we try to promote. But anybody can purchase any type of product or policy or whatever it may be.
Right.
As you know, in the end, life never lasts forever. So,
that's right.
You know.
And these policies or these financial services, then they're through these products, and because being a fraternal association, that's how the PFSA gets some funding for some of the cultural things that they do throughout the year.
Yes, yeah. So that gives us funding to donate to local charities. Like, for example, another one of my projects is I am helping out our Supreme President with her charity, which is this year it's Together We Rise. So it's a charity to help foster children. We give duffel bags filled with like essentials and a teddy bear for comfort, because most children, when they become foster kids, they leave their home with their belongings in a garbage bag. And it's depressing enough as it is if you lost your family and, you know, having to put everything in a garbage bag, it just makes you feel terrible. And so when I was elected president, we did customize two duffel bags to give to the children. And so far, we've been trying to raise money, you know, from Facebook and word of mouth to try to donate to the Together We Rise charity to help out these foster kids, because they're the ones that need it the most, especially, you know, during this time of year, around the holidays.
Right. So there's kind of a one charity that the president kind of picks to kind of make his or her, in this case a lady, her charity to focus on throughout that year.
Yeah, for each term. We obviously focus on other charities as well. We give out to the Ronald McDonald House and other charities. We give out scholarships as well for the youth and for those going to college. So there's a lot of different things we do to help out the community and help out those, you know, less fortunate, because after all, you know, that's what we're here to do, is help others and get the community involved and let everybody know what the Portuguese culture is all about.
Correct. And we're going to continue talking to Jason Denish, who is the 2030's president for the Portuguese Fraternal Society of America, PFSA, a national organization, so as Jason mentioned, with over 60 councils, not just in California, but in other states, including the East Coast. We're going to continue talking to him about PFSA, about his involvement in the Portuguese American community. He speaks Portuguese, so we're going to talk about how he still speaks Portuguese, which is something that a lot of young people don't. So lots to talk about with this young man who is involved in the Portuguese American world, and we need obviously more and more like Jason Denish. So we'll be right back with the last segment of this Portuguese American Hour, a product of the Portuguese Beyond Borders Institute at the California State University Fresno. Be right back.
Listen to the Portuguese American Hour on Multicultural 1600 AM. Hear in-depth conversation about Portuguese culture and learn everything happening in the valley within the Portuguese community. Listen Wednesdays from 4 to 5 p.m. on Multicultural 1600 AM.
Numa viela moraria apita barco no Tejo. Na rua passa o fio, em cada boca um beijo. Amor sem guarida, dor, sentimento, alegria. Tudo é fado, tudo é sorte, retalhos de vida e morte. É noite na moraria.
Listen to the Portuguese American Hour on Multicultural 1600 AM. Hear in-depth conversation about Portuguese culture and learn everything happening in the valley within the Portuguese community. Listen Wednesdays from 4 to 5 p.m. on Multicultural 1600 AM.
Welcome, everyone, to the final 15 minutes or so of the Portuguese American Hour for this edition. As you all know, we are a product of the Portuguese Beyond Borders Institute at the California State University, Fresno, and we have as a guest Jason Diniz, who is the 2030 president for the Portuguese Fraternal Society of America, PFSA. Let's talk a little bit, though, about your heritage. You have a unique situation, which is not so unique any longer, or has never been that unique, but you are trilingual, mm-hmm. And you basically have a connection with three different cultures, the hosh-posh of American culture, the Portuguese culture, and one other culture. So tell us a little bit about your family history.
Okay, so my mother immigrated here from Mexico, so she's Mexican. When she was 16, she immigrated here to America. My father immigrated from the Azores, from the island of Terceira, over here to America when he was about 6 years old. And then they met and got together and obviously had me. Mm-hmm. And then when I was younger, my mother, you know, she was an immigrant from Mexico. She didn't speak very much English, hardly at all. So when I was at home, I spoke, well, I would say 99% Spanish. Mm-hmm. And then whenever I got into school, then at school, obviously, I was taught English. And then when my mother went back to work and school was over, my grandfather on my dad's side would take care of me. And all he spoke was Portuguese. So I had to communicate with all three sides. So I wasn't necessarily forced to learn it, but it aided me now.
It was a natural process, basically, because you learned the language in a natural setting. It's wonderful, wonderful that you are trilingual and living with these three different cultures. So have you been involved, has your dad been involved in the Portuguese-American community and your grandfather, or have you been involved ever since you were a child, or how did you develop this liking for the culture?
Yeah. Well, when I was younger, like I said, my grandfather would take care of me most of the time on my vacations, so I was kind of involved in that. And then when I was younger as well, my family was involved in the Holy Spirit Festival, Portuguese festival in Madeira. Mm-hmm. We used to have a Portuguese festival over there. So they used to have, you know, the sopas, which is traditional, and you know, soup with bread and meat and that we would give out, you know, to the community. We would have Portuguese mass, Portuguese parades, we would put on Portuguese bloodless bullfights. So that is what really got me involved and gave me the passion that I have today of my Portuguese culture.
And since you mentioned bullfights, you're kind of unique in the aspects that you're also involved in that tradition as something that is called the bandeirilheiro. You just told me about, which I was totally surprised. I didn't know. I mean, I think I've seen the picture in the various media platforms, but I didn't associate that was you. So how did you get involved in wanting to be in a bull ring with a large bull that is not there because he wants to be there and sometimes is not happy. But how did you get involved in what made you step from attending a bullfight to being in the ring?
Okay, so this all started when I, everything started when I was young. So okay. This passion, not just for my culture, but for this aspect of my culture, which is the bullfight. When I was younger, we had that Portuguese festival in Madeira, and we were one of the first ones to bring some of the major bullfighters from Portugal over here. So we had a lot of famous bullfighters here, a lot of great bullfights, and that kind of started a fire in me ever mm-hmm. since I was very, very young. A lot of kids, when they played with their blocks, they would build castles and homes and whatever it may be. I would build bull rings and play bullfights with my blocks. And then in Chowchilla, which is a town about 15, 20 minutes north of Madeira, where I live now, they used to have bulls on rope, which is a mm-hmm. traditional bullfight they have in the island of Terceira and in the Azores now, where they let out a bull, you know, that's attached to a rope. In case of something, you know, somebody were to get hurt, they can pull the bull safely off of the person without the bull or the person being harmed. And then at those, it's more of like an amateur type of bullfight where as long as you're crazy enough to sign a waiver, you can mm-hmm. go in and test your luck out with the bulls. And between bulls, they would every once in a while, they would let out some wild heifers out there for mm-hmm. the smaller kids, younger kids. So, you know, when I was 10, 11, you know, 13, 14 years old, I would go out there and mess around with the calves. And then as I got older and more braver, probably I'll say around 2012, I started trying my luck with the bigger bulls. And then I learned more. And then I was more of an amateur, I would say, street bullfighter mm-hmm. on the Torres da Corda with bulls on rope.
The Capinha,
yeah. Okay. So I was a Capinha. And then about a couple of years ago, I got into contact with my now mentor, Luis Felipe, who is a Banda de Lei, which is like, I would say, a matador or bullfighter's assistant. Mm-hmm. And he's been doing this professionally for 25 years, coming from Portugal. And I just messaged him, just out of curiosity, you know, what does it take to become a professional bullfighter? Not just amateur, but professional in a bull ring, you know, where you can go fight in Spain, Portugal, Mexico. And so he just said, well, come at this bullfight here and at this town and let's have a chat. And so I talked to him and he just said right away, you're gonna come to my house at this time and we're gonna practice and train. So we did, and I practiced for about a week or so.
This was here in the States?
This was here in the States. Okay. Yeah. Okay. So he said, you're gonna come to my house in Hilmar and we're gonna practice and train. And then within about a week or two, there's gonna be a bullfight, which is a bullfight for the Carlos Vieira Foundation mm-hmm. for the cancer and autism.
Correct.
So he said, you're going to go and participate there because it's a professional, but like an amateur professional bullfight, which is called a festival, where amateurs can go and participate. They don't necessarily dress in the suit of lights, but mm-hmm. they dress in like a nice suit and stuff to go, you know, fight bulls. And I wasn't expecting much because I was still, you know, amateur, barely practiced for about a week or so. But he told me, all right, go on in and, you know, go fight the bull. And that's what I did for six of the bulls. And ever since then, I've been going to his house, practicing. We've built like bulls like on wheels mm-hmm. to practice with. Mm-hmm. I've already probably fought in about, I would say, 4 to 5 bloodless bullfights. Mm-hmm. I also help out with that Portuguese festival that's coming up on the April 18th. I help out with the bullfight demonstration there. I go and help out the Martins brothers in Hilmar. Mm-hmm. They have a like a training facility for mm-hmm. their professional bullfighter, who's Paulo Ferreira, mm-hmm. and I help their bull grabbers as well. The group called Turlock, which is the bull grabbers of Turlock, I help them with their heifers, and we practice. They help me practice. I help them practice, and I've also helped out other groups for causes like Merced as well. And then we also have a group of like retired bullfighters from mm-hmm. Mexico and from Portugal, and even some come all the way from Florida and different states who come and practice with heifers and stuff as well. And I help them out as well. So it's been a, you know, big journey, and it's still a lot to come.
You think you'll ever do it professionally?
I don't know. My mentor really wants me to do it, and a part of me really wants to do it, and then another part of me, not that I don't want to do it, but there's always that fear mm-hmm. in your mind. Because mm-hmm. no bullfighter goes in there without fear. Everybody has fear.
Sure.
It's just you have to learn how to overcome it and how to mask it and how to go out there with bravery and valor. And that's kind of where it gets your adrenaline pumping. Mm-hmm. So I just have to take that next step forward. If I want to do it, I'm debating myself.
Right, right. It's a big step.
It is a big step,
it's a big dedication as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. And a little bit about your involvement also in the Portuguese community. Have Have you had the opportunity to visit your father's land yet or no?
Unfortunately, I haven't.
You need to do that.
I do.
Before you become a professional bullfighter.
Everybody's been telling me since I was younger, you need to send this kid to Portugal because I love the culture. I love the language. I love the traditions. I haven't visited neither my mother's homeland nor my father's homeland.
Well, you'll get that opportunity soon, yes. I hope.
Oh, I would hope so too. But everybody knows if I go visit my father's homeland, I'm going to be stuck fighting bulls all the time. And it's just like, just don't go and get hurt.
That's true. You don't want to get hurt. No, we don't want you to. We're going to continue speaking with Jason for a few more minutes, but we'll take just a little bit of a break to listen to our daily song. And our daily song is from a friend of mine and a friend of ours in the Portuguese-American community. And that is Chico Ávila. I think the name is synonymous with music. Everyone in the Portuguese-American community knows who Chico Ávila is. And he will be singing for us a song called Canta Meu Amigo, Chico Ávila.
Canta, meu amigo, canta, vem partilhar a alegria, manda a tristeza embora. Que a alegria contagia. Canta, meu amigo, canta, que a vida vai melhorar. Deixa a tristeza lá fora, alegra-te, vem cantar. Para a tristeza basta a vida, para a alegria basta a festa. Para esquecer o dia a dia, um copinho é o que resta. O que é preciso é ter fé, que a vida vai melhorar. Bate palmas, bate o pé, alegra-te, vem dançar. Canta, meu amigo, canta, vem partilhar a alegria. Manda a tristeza embora, que a alegria contagia. Canta, meu amigo, canta, que a vida vai melhorar. Deixa a tristeza lá fora, alegra-te, vem cantar. A vida está complicada, a culpa é da economia. A gente anda estressada à espera do melhor dia. Digo a verdade, não minto, não quero esperanças falsas. Há que apertar o cinto para não perder as calças. Canta, meu amigo, canta, vem partilhar a alegria. Manda a tristeza embora, que a alegria contagia. Canta, meu amigo, canta, que a vida vai melhorar.
And here we are in the last 5 minutes of the Portuguese American Hour. That was Chico Ávila. Canta, meu amigo, sing, my friend. Chico Ávila, who will be our guest soon here in the Portuguese American Hour, a product of the Portuguese Beyond Borders Institute at the California State University, Fresno. And talking about that, we will have a presentation this Thursday, as you heard in today's program, Sam Pereira. It will be in the PB 191, Peters Building 191, this Thursday at 6 o'clock. It is called Creating a Third Country, Elements of the Portuguese and the American Cultures in Nuanced Poetry. Sam Pereira, a poet, a Portuguese-American poet who is now also a retired teacher living in the city of Los Banos. So do not forget, it's open to the public, free of charge, at 6 p.m. this Thursday, PB 191, and please use either parking lots 5 or 6. Those are the closest to the auditorium. In the next, in the last few minutes, I want to thank Jason, obviously, for taking the time, coming all the way down from the Chowchilla area to be on the Portuguese American Hour. And the last few minutes, Jason, what would you say to young Portuguese Americans in your age group who are listening, who are not really very involved? What are some bits of advice that you'd like to give to them if they're kind of curious about getting involved in the Portuguese American world?
Well, one thing I would say is I would challenge you to try to get involved any way possible. Any way you can get your foot in the door to any type of Portuguese event, it'll open the door to many other ones, because you'll learn, you'll meet new Portuguese friends, meet new Portuguese people that know of other events to which you can attend to. If you know, if you know of any one of our 67 consuls of the PFSA, mm-hmm. you know, find out when one of their meetings are, go in and attend, see what it's all about. If you know that you have a Portuguese festival in your area, go and attend, go see, you know, have the delicious food, go see how the environment is. You know, it's always a nice party. You always learn a lot, always see a lot of new different things. And I challenge you, even if you're just a tad bit interested, even a little bit, try to find some sort of Portuguese event in your community, get involved. Nowadays with social media, you can always find it. You can even visit our PFSA page within the next coming months. We announce all the dates for, well, not all the dates, but most of the dates for all the Portuguese festivals here in the Valley.
It's a wonderful source.
It's a wonderful source to find out, because all these events are free to the public. Anybody can come in. You don't necessarily have to be of Portuguese descent, but if you are, it's a great way to learn about your culture, meet new people, and just have a great time and enjoy some amazing food and amazing entertainment.
And lastly, what are you hoping to get out of being president of the 2030 president for the PFSA for this year?
Ultimately, I want to try to make an impact in our youth and our 20s, 30s. We definitely need more involvement. When you go to many of these Portuguese events, you know, it's mainly older people, older generation. There are some youth, but not as much as I think should be there, because ultimately we need more youth to continue on these traditions, continue on these amazing art forms, this amazing culture that we have that is very unique. And I just want to hopefully get more people involved, not only in the PFSA, but just in the Portuguese culture altogether, because it is a very beautiful thing.
Thank you so much again for taking the time to visit with us.
Thank you very much, and I hope you can have me again soon later on.
We will. We need to talk about more about the bullfights and about your future trip to Portugal. That was Jason Diniz, who was our guest for the last 35 minutes here on the Portuguese American Hour, the 2030s president for the Portuguese Fraternal Society of America. Thank you all for joining us. Thank you, Justice, for your work. Thank you, Esmeralda, for your supervision today. And thank you all for listening to the Portuguese American Hour every day now, 4 to 5 on KGST 1600 AM. We'll see you next time on the Portuguese American Hour, a product of the Portuguese Beyond Borders Institute at Fresno State. See you.
This was a special program on Multicultural 1600 AM.
Este fue un programa pagado y solo refleja la opinión de sus anunciantes. Ahora continúa disfrutando de la programación de 1600 AM.